the way we got onto this topic was when we were talking about patience and compassion enforcement, and the question was whether we viewed the potential loss of an entire set of dishes as tested for above, if each individual dish that you're passing in one is really tested for above, is a small loss. So the question is, how do you gauge it? Do you go based on the potential loss in the aggregate? Or do we say, well, each individual dish that you're paskening on is not worth so much, and therefore it's hefsid mu'ud, it's a small loss. So the request was made for me to expand on that question of how you calculate hefsid meruba. And boy, was that a mistake. Because when I started looking into it, I realized there's a lot I don't know about hefsid meruba. So, the kashering stuff we had completed. Although someone's asking that question, we didn't. No, I'm pretty sure we did. We dealt with the Pyrex and the china and the porcelain and the whole bit. So what I wanted to do was spend today's shiur on, first of all, the ground rules that we are makel for hefsid meruba, that we distinguish between hefsid meruba, hefsid mu'ud, great loss and lesser loss, to ask what the basis is for being lenient in a case of hefsid meruba, of great loss. Why should that matter? And then, as a side note, I'm just going to refer you to a couple of sources on the balance between hefsid. We'll see it. I need to explain a few backup steps first. Then, once we've got that down, then, God willing, next Friday, I would go through the question of which categories of halacha are we makil for hefsid meruba. Would you do it for a deoraisa? For a deoraisa lo sase versus a deoraisa ase? For a derabanan, what about a shvus dishvus? Then, after that, the question is, so how do I define hefsid meruba? Can you put a particular number on it? Is it a certain percentage of the item's worth? Is it entirely subjective? So there's a lot of very interesting material on that. Then once we've done that, I want to get to particular applications of hefsid meruba, like the question that we asked in the kashering shiur of whether you gauge by each item, whether you do it collectively. The question about of partners. What if people own an item together? And if you break down the loss based on each person's share, it's not meruba, but collectively it's a large item. Question of what do you do if three people come to you with unique shilos, and each item alone is not hefsid meruba, but you're going to have to paskin one way across the board, and therefore you will have caused collective loss. The question that we discussed tangentially last week, I discussed it only when I was doing the hachana. I think I mentioned it to you, Adam. The question of a vendor. You're going to permit the vendor to sell his items to avoid hefsid meruba, but the consumer who's buying the individual item has no such heter. So how do you allow him to buy the item? What happens if the hefsid meruba changes? And then the last part will be, God willing, what about other factors? If I say in halacha that you're allowed to be makel for hefsid meruba to avoid great loss, what about if it's not a hefsid meruba case, but it's a shat hadchat case? I have guests coming, or it's a Shabbos meal and I won't have meat, or something like that. How do we evaluate hefsid meruba on the scale of other reasons to be makil? Or is it not on the scale at all? Is it something entirely on its own? So, like I said, I'm expecting 3 weeks, and that's probably optimistic. But we'll see. So we begin with the whole topic of being makel for hefsid meruba. I brought you two sources where this comes up that are fairly straightforward. Source Aleph is a Mishnah in Shvius. It's Perek Aleph. It is Mishnah Dalet. And it's talking about working a field of trees before Shemitah. And the rule is that we gauge what you're allowed to do based on two factors. Number one, how productive the trees are. And number two, how many trees there are in the area. So the piece that I excerpted in Source Aleph says, May asara ulamala, the bracket words are words that I added just to help you read the line better. May asara ulamala, if there are 10 trees or more in the field, bein osin, bein she'inan osin, then whether they produce a lot, kikar devela is the shear that it should produce to be considered productive, but whether they produce a lot or not, or should call beit sa'ah, you're allowed to plow the entire beit sa'ah that they are in, the entire field that they are in, that's the size of the field, and you don't have to say just plow around the base of each tree, you're allowed to do that. This is before Shemitah. During Shemitah, you're not allowed to. This is Bechurishu HaKatsir Tishbos. But the point is that because you have many trees, we're going to permit you to do more plowing of the field, to work the field more. Because of the loss that would occur in the event that you were not to take care of them. And we also distinguish, even with a lesser number of trees, 3 to 9 trees, you have to see the Mishnah there, if they do more, then you're allowed to work the field more in order to avoid loss. So that's one example of it. A second example, more explicit, is the Gemara in Pesachim regarding chickens. And in order to understand this Gemara in source base, you need to know a little bit about chicken eggs. So apparently, and I did a little work on in delivery shurim and the Gemara in Beitza about the sort of the other end of the chicken, the other end of the egg, when the egg is inside the chicken, and the process there. But basically, the chicken egg goes through like a 26-hour process of formation and development of the shell. Most of that time is development of the shell when it's inside the chicken. And then it emerges. And then, as our Gemara is going to tell us, the first 3 days after the egg emerges from the chicken is when it starts to develop the chick. So that after 3 days, you will no longer have an egg. You're assuming that obviously it's a fertilized egg. But you're no longer going to have an egg that you would want to eat. Now, the only use it's going to have is to be a... is to be a chicken to hatch a baby chick. So the Mishnah there says, Moshivin shochan l'tarnagolim ba'arba'a asar. On the 14th of Nisan, when you don't do all sorts of other work, you are allowed to set up nests for chickens. V'tarnagolis shavarcha machzira nosa l'mekoma. And if the chicken runs away, you're allowed to put it back on top of the egg. That's the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. If those are both about the 14th of Nisan, what you're telling me, I can set up the nest. Of course, I can put the chicken back on it. That's much less labor intensive. Hashto subimosvina na adurimibaya. If you're allowed to set up the shovach, you need to ask me about putting the chicken back. So Amar Abaye seifa asan l'chol shel moed. So Abaye says no. The second half of that line that you're allowed to put the chicken back was not talking about the 14th of Nisan. It's talking about during chol moed. To say that on chol moed, I'm allowed to put the chicken back. Amar Rav Huna. So Rav Huna and Rabbi Ami are going to have machlokas here. Rav Huna says, Lo shanu ela toch shlosha lemerda. Rav Huna says, when we say you're allowed to put the chicken back, that's only if it's within 3 days since the chicken ran away. Why? Dekhati lo parach simra mina. Because at that point, the eggs are still warm. And therefore, you haven't lost the effect of the chicken sitting on the egg. V'achar shlosha lishi basa. And also, it's after 3 days from the time when the chicken first sat on the egg. So the chicken has been there for 3 days on this egg. Why? De pasta la bay la gamri. Because once the chicken has sat on that egg for 3 days, if you don't put the chicken back, the egg is going to be lost because it's only suitable for chicks now and the chick is dead. But if it's more than 3 days have gone by since the chicken already left, the parachlet simraminas, that is no longer warm, and therefore putting the chicken back isn't going to help you. Or if it had sat on the eggs less than 3 days, so that the egg is not entirely ruined, meaning somebody could still eat it, because it didn't go that far in forming a chick. So you wouldn't put it back. In other words, Rav Huna's statement is, it needs to be a total loss to justify putting the chicken back on the egg. It has to be that, number one, it will be a total loss because it's no longer usable for eating, it only is usable for a chick. And number two, it has to be close enough to the time that the mother fled that you can still put it back and it'll continue to develop a chick. That's Rav Huna's position. Rabbi Ami Omar, afil tok shlosha lishiva sama hadrinan. Rabbi Ami says no. He says even if it was within 3 days, even if the mother had sat on the chicks, on the eggs, for less than 3 days, you can still put the mother back on it. Even though it's technically edible as is. Why? Last line in source base. Because one view is, and this is the view of Rabbi Ami, that we are only concerned about great loss. We're not concerned about small loss. So therefore, even though now my chick is only going to be edible to people who actually are willing to eat this thing that partially formed a chick, nonetheless, I'm not allowed. I'm not justified in returning the mother. Whereas Umar Savar, and then the other one holds, that's Rav Huna, Lahav Sidmud Nami Chashashu. We are even concerned about small loss, and therefore we're going to allow you to return it, even if the mother had only sat on it for a day or 2 days initially. Are we clear on this? I realize that this whole like backyard chicken thing is a little bit new to people. But
why is one Hesed Merubah and one Hesed Merubah?
Because in the Hesed Merubah will be total loss of the eggs. Right? Hesed Merubah is total loss of the egg, meaning that the egg has already started to form a chick to the point where no one's going to want to eat this egg anymore, so you're not going to find a buyer to eat it. Right. But if I don't put the chicken back, then it won't form a live chick either. So it's a total loss. That would be Hesed Merubah. Hesed Mu'at would be... Well, collectively, it creates a Hesed Merubah. Because I don't have the option of raising a chick, and I don't have the option of eating it. So now it's useless. Whereas, the Hesed Mu'at would be, it started to form a chick, and it's not going to go the rest of the way, because I don't put the chicken back. So I'm not going to get a chick out of it. However, there are some people, as Rashi says, a Baal Nefesh, somebody who is able to do this and isn't an istinus. He isn't too delicate in his constitution. So he will go and eat this partially formed chick, and he won't mind. It doesn't bother him to eat this thing.
So maybe I got it backwards. The one who says Hesed Mu'at is Rav Huna. He said the chicken sat for 3 days.
No, the one who said, Rav Huna says that we are concerned for Hesed Mu'at. That's right, I'm sorry. So, I flipped them. I'm sorry, you're right, I flipped them. It's Rav Huna first, saying, Lehesed Merubah Chashashu, Lehesed Mu'at Lo Chashashu. That's right. That makes more sense. In general, Amar Savar and Amar Savar, I was thinking as I said that, usually the first Amar Savar is the first voice that you brought in the discussion. So, yes. Reverse that. Rav Huna is the one who says that they are only concerned for Hesed Merubah, so it would have to be a total loss. And Rabbi Ami is the one who says that we're concerned about that we're concerned even about Hesed Mu'at. That's the and therefore we put it back. Okay. So we're going to come back to the Hefsin Mu'at point, but the idea right now that I brought this for is simply to show that here's a basic halacha which says Tirchan Chalamoid will be allowed for the sake of avoiding Hefsin. Parenthetically, this also gives us a little bit of entree into the conversation that we're going to have about what is considered Hefsin Merubah. You're talking about losing an egg. How much is your chicken egg worth? You know, we're willing to call loss of a chicken egg Hefsin Merubah. So keep that in the back of your mind for when we get to the discussion of how much is Merubah. But we do distinguish between Hefsed Merubah and Hefsed Mu'at. We just saw that here as one example. Another example of that is Shabbos Kuf Nun Daled Amud Beis, source Gimel. The Amar Rav Huna. Rav Huna says, Haisa behemto tu'una klei zechuchis. In the case where my animal comes into the yard with my kelim on it on Shabbos. So now I'm stuck, the kelim are moktza. So if the animal is holding glass kelim, so what do? Maybe kar muksasas umaniach tachteha. So I bring cushions, put them on the ground next to the animal. Umatir chavalim basakin noflim. I untie the ropes and the sacks will then fall onto them. And that way the cushions will avoid the breakage of the kelim. Even though the problem that I have here is mevatal kli mehechano, because now the glass kli that's falling on it is muktzah, and therefore I'm taking the cushions which were usable before and rendering them non-usable, it's justified to avoid damage to the kelim. So the Gemara asks, Mesve, Haisabamto tuuna tevel vashashios. He says, we've learned that if your animal is loaded with tevel, right, useless produce for you, or shashios, lumps of glass, lanterns maybe. We'll see, because the Gemara is going to actually tell us what they are. Pieces of glass, we'll call it. So, matar sachavalim basakin noflin valfapishim ishtabrin. There we say, untie the rope and let the sacks fall to the ground. No cushions, no pillows. If the stuff breaks, it breaks. That's just the way it goes. So, I don't understand. Why was it?
So
tevel was the untied produce, and ashashios is, I'm going to call it pieces of glass because the next line in the Gemara. Usually an ashashios is a lantern. That's usually the way we render it. So he answers, hasam bikulsa. So the Gemara answers that the latter stuff, the stuff we say, let it break, is talking about kulsa, which I added in brackets from Rashi, are large pieces of glass that aren't worth a lot. So therefore, we're not going to justify violating the vato Kli Mehechano for the sake of saving them from breakage. And he says, I'll prove it to you, the Gemara says. Dekanami, you can prove that. Dekasani, dummy the table, because we compared it to the untithed produce, which is useless. So too, these pieces of glass are really not useful. To which the Gemara then asks, I'm speeding a little bit, because we started late. But the Gemara asks, my afapisha mishtabrin, then why did you bother saying, oh, you can do it even though they break? They're useless to you. Yeah, but I might have thought, I'm concerned even about hefsed muat. That's the idea. So there's another Gemara, and I got tired of bringing sources that support the same idea, but Psachim Chacham and Beis is another place where you see the idea where Abaye there says, we're only concerned about Hefsed Merubah. And this is indeed what is Paskin. The Rambam brings it in Hilchos Trumos, Perek Yud Beis, Halachos Dalet and Hay, where he talks about if you have a barrel that breaks and it's holding wine versus where it's holding oil. So he discusses the wine case. And the problem that I now have is my hands are tame, and am I allowed to save the wine? And the upshot of the discussion is that the Rambam is going to say, I'm not concerned for Hefsed Muat, I'm only concerned for Hefsed Merubah. You can see the Rambam there. The Prichadosh in Yeredeya Lamed Tes Chaf Zayin proves that we are not concerned for Hefsed Muat. He brings a variety of sources. The Stechemed quotes you source Hey, the Gemara in Moed Katan, where we're going to permit you to save wine, even though it's not worth as much as oil is, but don't take that to mean that you can save hefsed muat. It's not. It's merubah. The wine is also merubah. It's just not as merubah as the oil. Ayin sham. See that there. But I wanted to, if you want, I can go through it. But in the interest of time, I'm gonna jump that. But take a look at the Stechemed, Hey Sadi Aleph is where he discusses this Gemara. Okay, so we've established that Hefsed Merubah is a halachic factor. Hefsed Muat is not a halachic factor. Why is Hefsed Merubah a halachic factor? Why do I care about Hefsed Merubah when it comes to halacha? We should say, in Chochma Ben Yetzeve Tvuna L'Neged Hashem, there's a psak, and that's the psak. So, Rav Shem Ben Semach Duran, Rashbats, wrote a work called Zohar Harakia, and I quoted it here in Source Vav, in which he writes, he's dealing, this part of a section in which he talks about derabbanans. And he says, "Umekomos sheyesh ibud mamon ma'amas feka derabbanan," where there is a potential loss of property, and it would be because of doubt on a derabbanan, "Hadarahu yoser pashur shem chayavim lahakel bisfeko." Then he says, it is obvious that the rabbanan have to be lenient on the safek. Why? Because there's a basis for this in the Torah. He doesn't say what the basis is in the Torah. He just says, Hesed, the idea of being makeup for Hesed Merubah, is found in the Torah. And then he says, this idea that a derabbanan will be overridden is like the Gemara in Chulin, which we're going to see in a moment in Sor Zion. So I'm skipping his quote right now. We're going to see it in a moment. But after his quote, he says, "Havi sura derabbanan im amru kein lahatir speko yafehein osin." That if the rabbanan will be lenient in a case of safek for someone who has suffered, who is suffering, potentially suffering hefsed merubah, they're doing right. She'elanu la'abed mamonin shal yisrael. We should not destroy the property of Jews. Shu vadei de'oraisa. It's a deraisa, mishum sabik derabbanan. We shouldn't do that for the sake of a sabik derabbanan. So I don't know what he's talking about when he says that it's a deraisa. Does he mean it's lo sigzol? Does he? Why does he say that we have an obligation to protect mamonan shall yisrael? So the consensus of the poskim is that it comes under the principle of Rashbaz Rishon. Yeah, Rishon Shem Ben Semach Duran. So the consensus of the poskim is that it's because of the rule of Hatara Chasa Amamonim Shal Yisrael, that the Torah has mercy on the property of Israel, which is something that is found throughout the Gemara. I'm going to bring you four cases. There's a reason why I bring these cases. It's not just to show you four cases in which it shows up. These cases are significant. So take a look.
Then they assume that's what he means when he says it's in the Torah?
Yes, so it would appear. So the first case I bring you is in Sor Zion. It's a Gemara in Chulin, dealing with trefos. Amar Rav, chelev tahor. Rav says, if you have kosher chelev, right? Remember that fat there is within an animal, parts of the fat that are kosher, and parts of the animal, parts of the fat that are not kosher. So Rav says, if you have chelev that is tahor, meaning that is kosher, so same. If it seals up a hole in the innards of the animal, a hole that otherwise could have rendered it a trefa, then it is sealed. Tamei, however, if it's non-kosher chelev, eino sose, then it doesn't work as a sealant, and the animal's a trefa. Rav Sheshes Amar Echad Zeh Ve'Echad Zeh Sosim. Rav Sheshes disagrees and says either way, it seals up the hole, and the animal is not a trefa. And then we get a story. Hahu Nekev Desasma Chelev Tamei Da'asakamei the Rava. There was an animal that had this hole in the innards, and it was sealed up by chelev that was not kosher, that type of chelev, and the case came to Rava. So Amar Rava, Lamai Nechushla. Rava says, what am I concerned about here? What should we worry about? Chada Daha Amar Rav Sheshes Chelev Tamei Nami Sosim. He says, first of all, Rav Sheshes says that non kosher chelev also is valid as a hole sealer, and therefore it shouldn't be a trefa. That's number one. Ve'od, and further, ha-tara chasam amonim shal Yisrael. Right? The Torah has mercy on our property. So Amalei Rav Papa l'Rava, Rav Papa responds to Rava, what are you talking about? Rava v'isura de'oraisa v'at amrit ha-tara chasam amonim shal Yisrael. On one side of the scale, this is what the Rashbatze quoted. On one side of the scale, you have Rav Shita, who says that chelev tamei does not work to seal it, plus the fact that you're dealing with trefos, it's an isur de'oraisa. And the best you can do on the other side is to tell me, well, ha-tara chasam amonim shal Yisrael? You can't be lenient because ha-tara chasam amonim shal Yisrael on an isur de'oraisa. And that was what Rashbat was quoting, that you can't on a Deoraisa, only on a Derabbanan. Now, it's not so clear, because he also brings in the fact that Rav disagrees. He didn't only say it's a Deoraisa, he also brought in Rav. Nonetheless, that's the first source that I'm going to bring you here. The second source...
One more time, is that the Shita wants to be made... The Shita wants to be made gold, whether or not the Chayil is trefa or kasher.
Correct.
And in conjunction with the idea that the Torah is... Jewish money, yeah.
Yeah, and the response to him is, this is a Deoraisa, and Rav disagrees. So you can't play games.
And so we assume that that's the P'sak, or it's kind of like...
Yeah, no, that is the P'sak. He loses. This is brought by everybody when they want to show that you can't say Hefsed Merubah when you're dealing with a Deoraisa, only when you're dealing with a Derabbanan. Again, we have more to see on that when we get to that. That won't be this week. The second source on this that we want to look at is the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah talking about the chatzotzros, the trumpets that they blow on Rosh Hashanah versus the ones that they blow on a fast day. So the Gemara there says, Ubetanios b'shal zacharim kfufinu piv mitzupa kesef. The Mishnah said that on a fast day, they blow the horn of the they blow the horn from the ram, and it should be from the male, and it should be leave that. They blow the horn of the zachar kfufin. The horn is supposed to be curved, not straight. Upiv mitzupa kesef, and the mouth of it should be lined with silver. The mouth of it is lined with silver as opposed to gold. So the Gemara asks, Maishna hasam dizav, Maishna hadekesef. Why on Rosh Hashanah do they say the mouthpiece is supposed to have gold, but on the tanis it's supposed to be silver? So they give two answers. One possibility is that we learned from when Hashem told Moshe to make the trumpets that he would use to summon the nation. Hashem told him, use silver trumpets. So too, here we use silver for the mouthpiece. But the second answer is the one that interests us. Again, Hashem said, I'm not going to have you make this expensive thing out of gold. You'll use silver instead. To which the Gemara says, well, then why don't you use silver on Rosh Hashanah? And they think Kavod Yom Tov outranks Hatarach Chasam Amonim Shal Yisrael. For the honor of Yom Tov, you're going to make it out of gold. So that's the second source. Rabbeinu Gershom on the Gemara in Chulin actually quotes this Gemara as the basis for Hatarach Chasam Amonim Shal Yisrael, which is very odd, because we have other bases, but the Stechema discusses that in Heitzadi Beis. That's our second source. Our third source, Gemara in Yuma and source Tess.
Since so, they are repetitive, there's differences?
Yeah, there are going to be differences that we're going to see. The third source, Gemara in Yuma, regarding the box the Kohen Gadol uses to hold the lots on Yom Kippur, the lots for the Seirim. So, Omar Rava, Rava says, Kilfi shall eitz haisa v'shal chol haisa. Rava says the box was made of wood, And it was not dedicated as a Kli Sharis, as a vessel for the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara asks, Shalchol, it's mundane. Not Kisha. Why not dedicate it? Make it holy. You can't. Why? Imkein, Havalei Kli Sharis Shal Eitz. Because then you would have a wooden Kli Sharis. Kli Sharis Eitz Lo Abdina. We don't have a wood Kli Sharis. There's no such thing. Kli Sharis can't be wood. So the Gemara says, Zanu, make a box out of silver or gold. What's the holdup? Vanavda the kesef, navda the zav. Hataracha samamona v'shal Yisrael. Once again, the Torah cares about the property that we have. And then,
but it's straight to the Beis HaMikdash. We always go above and beyond the Beis HaMikdash.
Correct. I'm going to come back to that at the end. And then the last source is Yumim and Daled Amud Beis in Source Yud, which talks about the pan that they used to rake the coals, to get the coals for the Ketores in the Beis HaMikdash. Josh, did you do the daf that day? Was that one of yours? Mem Daled Amud Beis? It was a Sunday daf. Right. So every day they used the silver one, except for Yom Kippur when he used gold. So the Gemara asks, why do they use a silver pan every day? My time. Again, okay. So that's the principle. Where does Hatorah Chasam Amonim Shal Yisrael come from? And this is where it's going to matter in terms of which source we use. So we have two different sources that are presented to us with practical ramifications between them. First source that we get is the Mishnah Nigoyim, source Yud Aleph. Bless you. The Pasuk says, when we deal with the Kohen coming to a Bayis HaMenuga, to a house with Tzaras, V'tziva Kohen ufinu as HaBayis, the Kohen shall instruct and they will clear out the house. So, V'afilu chavilei eitzim, V'afilu chavilei kanim dira Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says you get everything out of the house, even bless you, bundles of wood, reeds, doesn't make a difference. Take everything out of the house, that it shouldn't be declared Tamei when he calls the house Tamei. Rabbi Shimon Omer Esek Hula Pinoi. Rabbi Shimon says, what? You needed the Pasuk for that purpose. Oh, now, because the Pasuk said, empty out the house before the Kohen calls it Tameh, now I know that. What did I need a Pasuk to tell me that? I'm a Rabbi Meir, so rather we get the approach of Rabbi Meir. The Chimama Tameh, though, Rabbi Meir says it's meant to teach us a lesson. And this is part of this, when I said that this topic also lends itself to Drush, this is one of the key examples. Rabbi Meir says, "V'chimama tamei lo." Really, what's going to become tamei here? Im tomar kli eitzav ubegadav umatchosav. If you tell me it's wood or it's clothing or it's metal, so dip it in the mikvah. Ma'vila mein tarin. Put it in the mikvah and it'll be tar. Amachasa hatar. What was the Torah concerned about here? Al kli cherso val pacho val tapav, for his clay vessels. Right, tapav, I added in brackets from Rashi, is a pottery kli that produces tipin, drops. But these little pottery things, that's what we're worried about for him. Because that can't have tara on a mikvah. So he says, in ka chasa tara mamono ha-bazui, if this is the degree to which the Torah cares about somebody's cheap property, ka v'chomer mamono ha-chavid, how much more so with his expensive property? And in ka mamono, and if that's true for his property, this person who's a Rasha, whose house has tzaraz, because no doubt he was a terrible person, ka v'chomer al-nefesh bana, I'm sorry, ka mamono, that's for his property, ka v'chomer al-nefesh bana v'ubnosev, how much more so for the lives of his children, as opposed to his property? And in kach al shel Rasha, kavachomer al shel tzadik. If that's true for the Rasha's property, how much more so for a righteous person's property? So that's the Mishnah in Nigoyim. That's one source. The other source that's brought as the origin of Hatara Chasamon Shai. So if someone wants to open the door because they're hot, it's fine with me. The room is boiling. I don't know if it's going to put anybody to sleep. But the otherwise, we're good with the heat. But the second source is the Gemara in Menachos in Source Yud Beis. So the Brisa there says, regarding the lechem aponim, the showbread that they use in the Beis HaMikdash every week, Tana Rabbanan, the Torah says, v'lakachta soles v'afisa osa, you should get flour and bake it. So if I would take that pasuk alone, I would say, your obligation is to go buy flour, right? That teaches me that the lechem aponim is purchased as flour. How do I know that even wheat works? That you're allowed to buy wheat instead? Because the Torah says, you shall purchase. So we understand that to expand and mean anything that you buy. I might think the same thing is true regarding other menachos, that you're allowed to buy it as wheat and you don't have to buy it as fully formed flour. Tamalomar osa. No, because the Torah says that's the one you do this for. Mipnei achisachon. And the reason is in order to save money. End of brisa. So the Gemara asked, "Manav ne'achi zachon?" What do you mean to save money? So Amar Belazar, "Atara chas amamonim shal Yisrael." Hecha Ramiza, where is this hinted that the Torah has mercy on Mamon Shal Yisrael? Dichsiv Hishkisa is Haidaves Biram. Because the Torah says, after Hashem produces the water for the Jews, miraculously, he says, you will provide water for the Eidah, for the nation, and for Biram, for their animals. That their animals should also have to drink. So the Gemara says, why does Hashem care telling them, have your animals drink? This shows that he's concerned about our property. Follow? Clear?
The source of Megayim, doesn't that imply more of a Darisa?
Because?
First of all, I'm comparing it to the Gemara Menachos Hecha Remiza, so I think it's clear.
Ah, good. The word Remiza.
But in the first one, it's saying, the Pasuk, the one uses the pinu, I don't know exactly what the word says.
Ufinu is a bias.
Yeah, so we're saying, we don't need that because we have another principle. I mean, doesn't that imply that, why do we need that Pasuk Dereza? We have a principle of Torah Hasal Mamon Shal Yisrael, so it's superfluous.
No, that wasn't the way they... are you asking... That's not the Gemara's question, that's your question.
That's my question.
So this is the origin of Torah Hasal. If not for Ufinu is a bias, I wouldn't know Torah Hasal Mamon Shal Yisrael. That's what he's saying. This is the source. Otherwise, I would not have known it. The Mishnah Negaim is pretending that Menachos doesn't exist.
Right.
Adam.
What about just all the basic laws of the Torah, such as Shabbos and Beit?
Right. So I could argue that those things are maybe what Rashbaz had in mind when he said the Rabbanim shouldn't create laws that are going to create loss for people. However, that wouldn't necessarily mean that the Torah is concerned, because after all, the Torah is filled with mitzvahs that require me to spend the oodles and oodles of money. Right? If the Torah was really so concerned about my money, I can think of a long list of things they could have changed. So that would be the argument in response, is that even though there are such precedents for saying that we should be cared about each other's money, maybe God feels free to require you to spend and spend. That could have been the argument in response.
Based on the first mark, shouldn't we say that you're not, that you should even be cautious for Hesed Ruach when you're talking about Pachet Kitanim, if that really
is so good. So the Stei Chemed in Hey Tzadi Beis, it's letter Hey, and then it's Siv Tzadi Beis, as well as the Mincha Tahora and Tzadi Zayin Amar Aleph, say there's a big nafkamina between the two. The nafkamina between the two is Hesed Muat. If I take the source in Menachos, so I can say, maybe buying flour versus buying wheat is a Hefsed Merubah. But you make a point in Negayim that it's Hefsed Muat. It's the little clay vessels. It's nothing.
Yeah, because it's cheaper than a Beitza?
So what the Beitza is, we're going to have to come back to. That way, when we do the shiur, that you'll be back in Israel for. And it'll be Shabbos for you when I give the shiur, so I'll be safe. But the... On Shabbos, yes. But the Beitza one we have to come back to. But the, that's the statement here, that yes, the item of least worth we could come up with was clay, and we said that even that, Hatara is chasa.
Yeah, but because that's also considered as in the Ubi, not because it's considered as in Muat, we are chosen to test
Muat. So the Poskim assume no, as the Poskim is sent to assume that it's Muat. As a matter of fact.
Right, meaning the Gemara says that Beitza is as in the Ubi, and we assume that Kitzel is as in Muat. So it might be that that's the way it was, I have no idea, that Beitza was less more expensive.
So, I have a source to show when we get to that topic, and because you won't be here, I can tell you now. But there was a point made by the Chashuke Chemed on Gittin Ches Amud Beis, where he talks about the subjective nature of Hefsed, and how people who, a person has an apartment on the second floor, and the clothesline falls into the gutter, he's not going to run down and get it. But a person loses a chicken, which is worth less than the clothesline, somehow psychologically, emotionally, he's going to go running after the chicken. It's just the way people function. You can't necessarily pin it only to the value of the item, the objective value of the item. But this now goes back to a question that the Kilas Yaakov asks. It's not the Kilas Yaakov that we're familiar with, the Stipler. It's a different Kilas Yaakov. I'm trying to find my source on it. One second. The question is going to come up later on. Where did I put it? If I don't find it right away, I'll just tell it to you outside. Yeah, it's in his Tosfos Derabanan. It's Hey Kufyud Gimel is where it is. You can find it online. It's available. So he asks the question. He says, yeah.
What are we doing now? We saw a bunch of Gemaras bunch of different things about Hefsed Merubah.
Right.
And now you're trying to do what?
What's the source for the principle of Hefsed Merubah, and does it matter? And so what we've seen are two different sources that give me are your basis for Hefsed Merubah. One is Upinu Es Habayis in Negayim. The other one is...
Do you want to leave those poor...
I'm coming back to them.
But for now, just comparing the Negayim and Menachos?
Right now, comparing Negayim and Menachos, correct. So, Negayim has Upinu Es Habayis. Menachos has Vishkisas Haidav Es Bi'iram. The Nachamina between the two is Hefsed Muat, where it would seem that Negayim is arguing that even for Hefsed Muat, I should be Chas. So the Kilas Yaakov, in this Tosas de Rabbanon, asks, I have a link for Hebrew books, if anybody wants to find it there, I can give it to you later. But the Kilas Yaakov asks, if I have Negayim as my basis, then why is it that Shabbos Kuf Nundalad Amud Beis and the other sources that I mentioned before distinguish between Hefsed Merubah and Hefsed Muat? Psachim Nun Hei Amud Beis, Psachim Chav that we didn't see. Why do they distinguish between Hefsed Merubah and Hefsed Muat? According to Negayim, it doesn't. He leaves it as Sarachiyun. But the Mincha Tahara, Tzadi Zayin Amud Aleph, says the answer clearly is Shabbos Kuf Nundalad is following Menachos, that the source is not Negayim, the source is instead Mishkisas Haidav Es Bi'iram, and an animal is Hefsed Merubah. So now the question is, which source is it? This has a practical application now. So it's funny because the Taras Chaim on Chulin Nun Memtes Amud Beis says the source is Vishkisas Haidav Es Bi'iram. He takes the source as Menachos. So the Stechemed asks in Hey Tzadi Beis, why doesn't he use Negayim? Not only that, why did the Gemara Menachos use Negayim? And not only that, here is where I come back finally to the Gemaras that you ask, why am I bringing all these Gemaras for? Why is it that Rashi on the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah about the shofar, on the Gemara in Yuma about the kilfi box, as well as the Gemara in Chulin, Memtes Amud Beis, about the trefos, in all those cases, Rashi quotes you a source for Hatara Chas Amalonim Shal Yisrael, but he quotes Ufinu Es Habayis. He does not quote Vishkisas Haidav Es Bi'iram. In all those cases, he quotes Negayim. But then, when he gets to Memdalad Amud Beis in Yuma, the one that deals with the machta, the shovel that they're using to take the coals, he doesn't quote any source. So what's going on, and how do I understand, and how do I decide which source I'm using? So, the Maharam Bach, in his Yom Teruah, to Rosh Hashanah Chav Zayin Amud Aleph, which I would not have found on my own, but the Sech Hamed is what it tells you, it's there. However, the Yom Teruah is available on your Bar Ilan CD-ROM if you have version 21. I don't know about an earlier ones. He offers a fascinating approach, and I brought it here for you in Source Yud Gimel. He answers a whole bunch of questions, which I'm going to skip in the interest of time, but I brought them here because they're interesting questions about this Ufinu Es Habayis. Yes, Adam.
So just to be clear, are the two Gemaras in the Negayim and Menachos different than the four above because they actually quote Sukkim?
Yeah, because they actually tell me the source instead of just saying there's this principle out there about Tarachas and they're trying to tell me where it's from. Although, as Josh noted, Menachos just says Remiza. But the last piece in the Yom Teruah in Source Yud Gimel, his last Ve'im Tomar, he says, Ve'im Tomar, Dahacha Amrina Da Tarachasa, Nirali Mikra Devi Zvitziva, sorry.
Nothing.
Oh, Nafkal, yeah, thank you. Nafkal Mikra V'Tivitziva Kohen, right? Over here, when you're in Negayim, the Torah says from V'Tivva Kohen, or at least Rashi and Rosh Hashanah says it as well. It's Ufinu Es Habayis. However, in Menachos, Nafkal Midichsiv Ishkisai Zaydav Es Bi'iram, suddenly they're drawing it from giving the water to the animals. So he says, Yesh Lomar, Deman Demapik LaMikra DeVetziva Kohen, Savar Demay Dechsev Ishkisaz Haida, Havitama Mishum Tzar Balei Chayim. He says, the answer is, if you take the Pasuk in Negayim, it's because you don't like Menachos. Because the reason why Hashem says, feed your animals, is not to teach you, I care about your animals and as your assets, but I care about your animals because I don't want them to be in pain. Hashem is teaching them Tzar Balei Chayim De'oraisa. And if you take the view then it's Vishkisa Nabez Biram is about feeding your animals because they are your property. It's because I say Tzar Balechayim is not De'oraisa. Tzar Balechayim is De'orban, right? That's a machlokes in the Gemara Bava Metzia. So he says, that's what this is really about. It's a machlokes about whether Tzar Balechayim is De'oraisa or De'orban. If you paskin Tzar Balechayim is De'oraisa, then your source has to be Ufinu es Habayis. And if my source is Ufinu es Habayis, then I'm not, but even for Hefsid Muat. However, if I say that Tzar Balechayim is De'orban, which I think is the way we paskin, if I remember correctly. Really? Okay.
Very close.
Okay. Interesting. No problem. If you could tell me what you have, I'd be interested. I had assumed, I didn't look into it for this year, but I thought I remembered that it was Derabanan. But if we take the view that it's that Tzar Balechayim is in fact a Derabanan, then in that case, I will say that Mishkisai Seydavis B'Iram is here to teach me about animals as my property, not about having mercy on the animals, and therefore, taking this source, instead of taking Ufino as Habayis, I only know about Hefsid Merubah, not about Hefsid Muat. You follow? That's the idea. And then what is Ufino as Habayis for? It teaches me another lesson. But that's the idea that the Maharam Bach suggests. Got it? So how I paskin on Tzar Balechayim is going to determine how I paskin on Hefsid Muat. If Tzar Balechayim is a De'oraisa, then I'm going to say that we're makbid even for Hefsid Muat.
What's the connection?
Because if Tzar Balechayim is De'oraisa, then Mishkisai Seydav Es B'Iram was really about Tzar Balechayim, and then Hatorah Chasa really comes from Mishkisai Seydav Es B'Iram. From Mufinu Es Habayis, thank you. It comes from Mufinu Es Habayis.
And if you use Menachos for Tzar Balechayim, then you have Negayim free to learn about Hefsid Merubah?
Correct.
Hefsid Muat?
Yeah.
But if you don't use Menachos... So either way, you're using Menachos about Tzar Balechayim, which way are you using it?
No. If Tzar Balechayim is Derabanan, then Menachos is now free to teach me about Hatorah Chasa.
According to this, then Rabbi Trichet would be right that it would be only Derabanan for Tzar Balechayim, because we're pasuk at the end, we say, we're not worried about Hefsid Muat.
So we think, anyway, yeah. Until we get to next week, but yeah. We generally assume that you're not, and that would seem to link to saying it's Derabanan. That's the Maharam Bach, which I found fascinating. There is another answer.
That should be Yidan. Is that a whole lot of support? That's what it comes to Mishkitat Eidah Be'atzon. Mishkitat Eidah Be'er.
Yeah.
Gashan Be'iran, זה לבוא המוכר שהנקודה היא לא מצד הצון עצמו, אלא מצד ההפסד של העדה.
מבני שהוא הדגיש שזה שלום.
באיראן, זה היה כתוב שכדאי תהיה להבין הצון עם החשיבות לארץ צער בעלי חיים. צער בעלי חיים זה גם לבמות הפקר.
אוקיי. I hear. It's an interesting point. If you wanted to say homiletically, you could say that he's giving Moshe an instruction. Atat tashkeh ashezeh shalahem. Kamo Rivka.
Yeah,
well, that's true.
So if you say Tzar Balechayim is Derabanan and Menachos is free, what's compelling you to learn from Menachos and not Negayim? You could still say you want to learn from Negayim.
Yeah, in a Chanami, no. So I hear the question. I don't have an answer. It's true. The second answer that's offered here, and this is going to take us back to our Gemaras and Rashi on those Gemaras, is the Note of Yehuda. The Maharam Bach doesn't answer the question about why Rashi chooses to quote these, other than you could then say that Rashi is quoting Ufinu es Habayis because Rashi is holding that the Tzar Balechayim is De'oraisa. You could take that. But the Note of Yehuda offers a different answer, which it's already 11:22, so I'm going to say it outside, but you can see it in the Note of Yehuda there. He says, Ufinu es Habayis doesn't teach me much, because there's nothing to lose by saving this guy's kelim. It's not a chiddush. Take your kelim out of the house, like Rabbi Shimon himself said. Of course we're taking his stuff out of the house. He says, the greater chiddush is v'hishkisa, because Hashem creates a miracle to give them water, and now he's going to also create a nais for the animals to get water. It's a greater chiddush. He says, Vishkisa as I know is B'Iram in Menachos is the greater chiddush. And therefore, that's really what I should use. However, Vishkisa in Menachos is property of the Tzibur. Back to B'Iram. It's property of the community as a whole. Which makes sense for Menachos, because Menachos is dealing with Lechem HaPanim. right? It's dealing with the bread that's produced by the community. So therefore, if I only have menachos and v'shkisar sa'idavas v'iram, I know Hashem is chas ha'mamon shel Yisrael in the aggregate, the nation as a whole. But I don't know that Hashem cares about each individual's property. And that's what I need Ufino as habayis for. The point of Ufino as habayis in Negayim is to tell me that Hashem cares even about the individual's property. Which is why, going back to those Gemaras now, that Rashi insists on quoting Ufino as habayis for, it's because those are private property. The Gemara in Chulin is the non-kosher fat filling the hole in the intestine. Rashi's not going to quote you Menachos. Because Menachos is communal property. He's going to quote Ufino as habayis. Ditto for the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah about the mouthpiece, and for the box is private property that's used for the Shnei Seirim. So he says, that's what the Note of Yehuda says.
The box is private, so there's some English.
Right, so if you take a look at the Note of Yehuda, he gives you a long piece. I didn't actually, it's not the piece I quoted here, it's right afterwards, where he explains the property, the box of the Beis HaMikdash also. But he comes up with a way to Yashiv Rashi on all of those to show that it fits, that those are Yachid. So you need two different sources, one for the Yachid, one for the... Very good.
Is there a Rashi that discusses the stuff on Yom Kippur and the shofar?
He uses the Pinot
Sabais. But isn't that's private?
So go back to that Note of Yehuda where he walks you through it. Okay. Take a look at that Note of Yehuda. If you don't have it, I can send it to you. But yeah. So the question then is, if the Torah cares about my assets, then why isn't it makbid for Hefsibuat? Right? And if we say Atara Chasa, then why aren't you makbid for Hefsid Muat? The Nachla Shiva in Source Tesvav says, V'ulai demishum hefsid muat l'ratzu labra al divrei ha'osrin. Dimlokin la'olam l'nechash l'divrei ha'osrin. Dipshita diyesh hefsid muat l'chol davar ha'nesar. He says, every time you have an isser on something, you're going to lose money. I mean, that's just the way it goes. There's a cross associated with everything. If you were to say, Atara Chasa l'manush l'yisra, there would be no more isseri derabanan. If you were to apply it even to Hefsid Muat. He says it's just not doable. So that's a reason why not. The last point that I was going to make, I'm just going to give you a reference to it, but I gave you the source here, source Tezayin, is the question of, we have a principle in the Beis HaMikdash of Ein Aniyus B'Makom Ashirus. Things in the Beis HaMikdash should be expensive because you don't have poverty in the place of wealth. How does that square with Atara Chasa L'manush Shel Yisrael? Which is it? When do we say one, when do we say the other? In fact, the Gemara Menachos that I brought you here in Source Tezayin pits one against the other. When it talks about how the Chachamim gauged how much oil to put in the menorah, how much oil is needed to go overnight, there's a discussion about whether they did it by starting with a minimal amount and then adding as was needed, or whether they started with a large amount and then reduced as was needed, throwing out whatever was not needed. And the view that says that they started with a small amount, Milamata Lamala, says they started with a small amount because Atara Chasa Mamonim Shal Yisrael. So have them spend as little as possible. So start with small amounts and add as you need. Whereas the view that says they started with a large amount and then work their way down says, Eina Niyas B'Makom Hashivus. It's not nice to put small amounts in and use as minimal amount as possible. So the question fundamentally is, how do we apply it? So there's a work, the Tshuva Me'ahava, which you have on your Bar Ilan. I referenced it to you in Source Yud Zayin, who tries to show where we do one, where we do the other. But the Yom Trua, I brought you in Source Yud Ches. The Yom Trua is again that work from the Rashbats that I quoted before in Source Yud Gimel. So he says the answer really is you have to balance it, and in some cases it's one way, and in some cases it's the other way. Sorry, Marlbach. Yeah, when I say Rashbat, yeah, sorry, Marlbach. Sorry, here with the Rashbats. But the Yom Trua's answer is that it really depends on the particular situation. As he says, is that talui b'shikul das chachamim l'aseis hefresh bein davar l'davar? It's up to the chachamim to figure it out. He says, you're right, there are competing interests involved, and sometimes it's one and sometimes it's the other, and it's up to the chachamim to figure out which one to apply. See also this Dechemed, Aleph Kuf Chav Ches. where he prefers the approach of the Maharal Bach over the approach of the Tshuva Me'ahava. Okay, so again, just to summarize what we've got, we showed that we are Mekel for Hefsed Meruba, at least in the Rabbanan. We are not Mekel for Hefsed Mu'at, it appears. The Rashbat said that this is a De'oraisa idea of Hatarah Chasam, in general, of being Mekel. We assign it to Hatarah Chasam Amonu Shal Yisrael, which comes up in the range of cases that I brought you. The source for Hatarah Chasa is either Negoim with Ufinu as Habayis, or Menachos of Ishkisai Zaydav as Bi'iram. The difference seems to be that Negaim is about even Hefsed Mu'at, whereas Menachos is Hefsed Meruba specifically. So then the question is, which source is it? Is it Menachos or Negaim? We noted that Rashi kept quoting Negaim as the source. The Moran Bach offers the approach to say that it depends how you pasken on Tzar Bali Chaim. If you say Tzar Bali Chaim is De'oraisa, then it's Negaim is your source, and therefore Hefsed Mu'at is included. If you say Tabachim is Drabbanan, then Vez B'Iram is your source, in which case it's only Hefsed Meruba. But then we saw the other answer, the answer of the Noda B'Yehuda, who offers you along the way another Nafgamina. He says that it's because Menachos is communal property, whereas Negayim is private property. And he says the Upinu es Habayis then is saying, one second. He's saying Ufinu es Habayis is teaching me, as Rav Baruch expanded it, Ufinu es Habayis is teaching me that where there's nothing to lose by doing this, so you say the property of the individual, even though it's Hefsed Mu'at. That's Negayim. Whereas Menachos is telling me that when it comes to communal property, we are indeed concerned about the potential for Hefsed Meruba, and we're going to, even if there's a cost to us, in this case it's the nes of producing the water, we're still going to be makbid for the Hefsed, and we will be makil on people. And then he applied that to the Rashi and so on. And then the last bit was, if the Torah cares about our assets, then why not care about Hefsed Mu'at also? And then Achla Shiva says, because then you won't have any Yisurei Derabbanan anymore. Because all of them will be void, because you'll say, well, it's Hefsed Mu'at.
Why can't you say very simplistically that the guy is about private property, then the person asks you a shayla about themselves, and they do have a source that would make up a Hefsed Mu'at?
Because that's only where there's no cost. There's a cost here of you're losing the Yisurei Derabbanan.
So when is there a halacha category of no cost, or something that just happens to be the case? So it is like the source from the guy is a
no. There is no such thing as a no cost case, right?
But that's not really a shot.
Except that it means in general, and I'm sort of cheating by going back to Adam's point about a Shabbos Aveda and so on. There are cases that don't involve violation of a halacha in which I should be chas on the mona.
זה הכל ספרות אחרות לחלוטין, כלומר כל אחד מהם מגיע בכיוון אחר. אני הייתי אומר, אפשר, הייתי מציע, שבמקום שבו השיקול היה שיקול של חכמים, חכמים שאלו את עצמם האם לגזור או לא לגזור. אז פה יכול להיות שאפילו בהפסד מועט הם לא גזרו. כי מלכתחילה השאלה עמדה בפניהם האם לגזור או לא לגזור. יכול להגיד, אנחנו לא גוזרים. למרות זה מקום שבו יש ספק אם יש איסור או לא, אז שם אני יותר אתן להגיד שרק בהפסד מרובה. כי באמת יכול, יש פה מחיר שיכול שאני עובר עליו, שיכול שאני עובר על איסור. כל שבו ודאי יש איסור, ואני מקל בגלל שיש צער או משהו כזה, אז ברור שם אני צריך את ההפסד הגדול ביותר. זאת אומרת, אני חושב שיש מקרים שאפשר לקרוא להם no cost. זה המקרים שבהם חזר בא מלכתחילה לתקן את התקנה,
אבל יש סיבה לתקן את התקנה, אז יש איזה קוסט.
היא יותר חיצונית, אני חושב.
אני לא חושב, in general, we say משמרת למשמרתי, because there's a משמרת to protect.
כן.
How are we defining communal property? Because Shkisas Biram is everybody.
Right, it's not really
together.
Right. It's not
the same as the Beis Hamikdash.
Good. So I want to come back to that, God willing, when we finally get to the point of answering Rabbi Akiva Eiger's question that got us into this trouble in the first place. the question, or it's really, it's one of his series of questions, which is, what happens if three people come to me for a psak on something, and for each one it's hefsed mu'at, but by giving this psak, I'm now going to passel the community, and therefore it's hefsed merubah. So I think there, that question becomes the most relevant. All right, Shkaya, we'll pick up, God willing, next Friday.